will be our study for this morning. In just a minute, I'm going to get my slides loaded. I didn't load them up here behind, but... Walking on water. That will be the theme of the discussion this morning, and I hope that we can understand some things. We note from 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, verse 7, we are to walk by faith and not by sight. And really the question we'll eventually get to is, what does that mean to do so? Why would that be important? You know, from the very beginning of God's scriptures, His design was for man to be faith walkers. It really was, because think about it. We've studied in the book of Genesis, these man and this woman is told to not eat of a certain tree of a fruit, and Adam and Eve. And they were told, if you do eat of it, you will die, right? And they still ate anyway. They knew God. They walked with God more intimately than man had ever done before. That man would do afterwards. And yet at the same time, they thought they knew more about God than they actually had. They were not faith walkers in that way. After they left that garden, they had to walk completely by faith. And that's what God has designed throughout the rest of the ages, all the way down to this point in time. So understanding what it means to walk by faith is so important. And it's so vastly important to our very salvation. We better pay attention to it. And again, Jesus will teach us this morning. So we need to see that. It was a painful reality for many. Remember, even besides the garden scene, when they walked with God in the garden, again, they were walking with Him. The idea of walking is an important theme. When Abraham walked to Mount Moriah, he was walking as the Lord had directed him to sacrifice his sons. Remember the Israelites. In order to get across the Red Sea and away from the enemy army, they had to walk, you see, across the Red Sea, as God had instructed. Remember the children of Israel when they were going into the land, and the first walk that they did after they crossed that Jordan was the walk around the city walls for those 7 days. They had to walk triumphantly around Jericho. Walking was vastly important. What about the story of those two disciples that walked on the road to Emmaus with that unrecognized stranger? They were walking as God would have instructed. Remember Saul's interrupted walk to Damascus. Here he's walking for one purpose. God stops him, and then he finds out that his walk's for a different purpose. So he walks on into Damascus with that in mind. And we cannot forget, most importantly, our Savior Jesus, who walked from the Praetorium to that Golgotha hillside. He walked. And we nonetheless are called to walk. Let's look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 12. Before we get into our text. Walking, dear friends, is not an option. It's not a request. It is a demand. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and in verse 12, so that you would walk, he says, in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into His own kingdom and glory. All the things that he said before, so that they may walk in a manner worthy of God who calls us into His own kingdom and glory. So dear friends, let us see what we can know and learn about walking from this very night in Matthew chapter 14, beginning at verse 22. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. And after he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, "It is I, do not be afraid." Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, or if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened and began to sink. And he cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased or stopped. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly God's son." Peter certainly demonstrated faith, and yet at the same time, we find out in the text that there is a lack of faith in him as well. And the others, of course, stayed in the boat all the while watching. When Jesus was identified to them, they didn't even attempt. They didn't even ask. They didn't even verify. "Is it indeed you that's out there, Lord?" And so what we need to learn is that our walk by faith, it demands our discernment of what is true as opposed to what isn't so. We've got to be able to discern that. He certainly asked Jesus, "Is it you? And if it is, then I will believe that it is you in this very stormy, dark night when you call me to you and I come out." He didn't even question the fact that there was a body of water sitting under his feet, so many feet deep that would have drowned him easily. It's a man who's a fisherman, been on this water many a time. He never walked on it before. He never even attempted. Peter's learned a lot about faith along the way. He is confident that Jesus could even do this for him. That if Jesus is indeed out there and outside a boat, then he can call him and he would be out there with him as well. For as much as Peter's impetuousness, as much as he is one who seems to be very rash, he has certain very simple principles in mind, and we will do good to learn from him. And so that's what our attempt will be this morning. You see, this is a routine trip. These guys, for the most part, with some exception, were seasoned seamen. This storm, of course, was raging. They knew about it, and they were certainly concerned, just as they would be on the other occasion in which Jesus would calm the storms as they were moving about and seemingly going to be capsized. But the simple trip, this very simple trip on this very night, think about it. What could go wrong? They knew what was going on. What could go wrong? They were crossing the Sea of Galilee. They would see Jesus the next day, no doubt. They knew that to be the case. John would even say that it was about the, we see here in our text by indication that it is the fourth watch, which would be about anywhere from 3 to 6 a.m., very early in the morning, but no doubt still very dark. And they were exhausted, no doubt, as well, as they were probably managing that vessel the best that they could on that very tempestuous sea. And here's this shadowy figure coming to them, and they're trying to identify them. And they are fearful. And then when Jesus speaks, Peter says, "Call me out to you if you are indeed Jesus." And he says, "Come." And he begins to walk at the very moment. Yes, he had fear. Yes, he had concerns. Yes, he even paused for the moment, didn't he? And he fell. And then Jesus would pick him up and then proclaim his lack or his little faith. But remember, the rest remained in the boat. They never left, did they? They didn't even say, "Jesus, please call us and we'll come out to you as well," did they? Something to remember. We're going to see how this plays into or how this is affecting our faith. What we need to learn by it that is so vastly important to our faith. Jesus is calling us, we might argue, to get out of the boat. Will we get out? Will we get out as Peter got out? And so that's the question we'll answer this morning. Again, we walk by faith and not by sight. But what does it mean? I said something about getting out of the boat. But really, when you understand what this is talking about, and you take the metaphor that is being described for us, and you put it into practicalities, it can be very challenging. And furthermore, we need to be able to be challenged. We need to understand that we are called and we are challenged by God. I would argue in this particular instance, as we're studying, and the illustration given to us, that Jesus intending for us to note that we're to get out of the boat. That we're to get out of the boat. It's not some mere story to see Peter's faithlessness. I understand that Jesus identifies him as a faithless one, and I know that that's a component part, but that is not the entirety of the story. It's not just for us to see that Jesus could do these great things, for he could, but we need to learn from them. Every step of the way, Jesus is teaching us, not only by word, but likewise by deed. So I would argue we must get out of our boats. Put yourself in Peter's place. This boat would represent what? Put yourself particularly, as many of us might be, in the rest of the disciples' place. What does this boat represent to you? Security? Safety? As bad as that storm was, which would you rather, be in the boat or outside the boat? There's no land. You're not a fish. You have no gills. I don't care how strong a swimmer you may be. Even the strongest swimmer can only last so long in a terrible sea. There's a lot of dangers. There's a lot of challenges. And the fact of the matter is, this boat represented safety and security. And I get it. And we need to get that too. Because there's many things that will occur in our lives that we will feel very safe and secure when we remain in those places. But the question will that be acceptable? Should we stay in that safe and secure place? You know, we all are about safety and security as a general rule. We present certain things in our lives. We develop plans as groups and collectives for safety and security all the time in hopes to make people feel at ease about this, that, and the other, whether it be the pandemic or whether it be our insurance for our families to make sure that we're safe. We know that the law requires us to have insurance, for instance, for automobiles, but on the other hand, most of us are all right with that, aren't we? Because we know that it may protect us in some way financially. We may be able to replace our vehicles. We have home insurance, house insurance. We prefer that, especially when great storms come, don't we? Because we don't have the capital to replace all that we owe. So the fact of the matter is, there's a place for safety and security. Some of us have retirement plans in order to plan, hopefully, for some security, if not entirely, for our future when we are leaving our place of works. We have health insurance for the same purposes. You see, we're about safety and security, aren't we? And I'm not talking about this morning removing any of these barriers. It's not even a lesson about that. But it does inform us something about ourselves, doesn't it? And the more that we are involved in these sorts of things, the more we think that away. And then consequently, what if it permeates the rest of our lives so that we never leave the boat and we really truly lack in faith? That water was rough that night. Why would Peter even dare to even want to get out of that boat? Even identifying Jesus, wouldn't it be a more safer task or much safer for them to say, Jesus, come to us, right? If Jesus came to them, obviously he could get in the boat with them, right? Wouldn't that be much simpler? Wouldn't you prefer that? Jesus, please come. If you are indeed Jesus, think about the flip side. Peter saying, if you are indeed Jesus, come to us. Again, we need to make sure that we cannot, with 100% certainty, find safety and security in this temporal life. It's not going to happen. For all of our strivings and challenges, we know as well as anyone else, hopefully, but we don't pay attention, do we? Often, that it's not easy. It's not easy to secure ourselves and be safe. We can be relatively safe. And so when it comes to temporal affairs, of which we cannot control always, that we cannot always be safe or secure, but we can strive to be as much as we can, how much more should we give some consideration to our faith in regards to security? And ask ourselves, what does it really mean to be safe and secure? And what does it mean to walk by faith? And can they really be in opposition to one another, in contradiction? Can one actually stomp or kill out the other? Can they give us great dilemmas and challenges in our lives? Certainly they can. Each of us, we would argue, has a boat. Each of us truly has a boat. And we're aiming for security, aren't we? Notice in Matthew the 6th chapter, Jesus speaks very succinctly on this matter in the sermon. On the Mount, as we call it. In Matthew, the 6th chapter and verse 19, a passage that's familiar to us, he tells us plainly, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." All right. Jesus talks of security, doesn't he? He doesn't talk about eliminating security. But on the other hand, he says we may have a misplaced security. In other words, our security is placed in the wrong bank. And consequently, we will lose, won't we? He says if you put your treasure upon things here temporally, they will be destroyed. He makes a simple fact analogy. What is it that you don't see around you that does not decrupt, does not rust, does not decay, is not destroyed? So you place your security in these things. We individually, each of us, we have a boat. We talked about that just a minute ago when we said some of us have home insurance because we have homes to protect. We have car insurance because we want to protect that. We may have life insurance to protect the welfare financially of our families. We have health insurance as a wealth, as a security protection. And of course, we talked about our retirements. All of these are wonderful. But bottom line is, Jesus says, guess what's going to happen? Every bit of those things that you're trying to protect will decay or corrupt. Even your family, even yourself. It's implied of treasures. He's just very broad here. But we have to understand, whether it be tangible things or our very own selves or our families, there will come a time in which you cannot provide for the security any longer. Sickness comes. Decay, disease, death. Just as much as it is with our material things that we enjoy. In other words, we're learning that we cannot remain in the boat if we're going to have faith. We cannot remain in the boat if we're going to walk by faith. Each of us have a boat. Each of us have a boat. Some of it may be it's our jobs. Maybe our boat of security is our actual money, as the rich young ruler indicates to us. And maybe in chapter 19, maybe it's about our families, our relationships that we enjoy. Maybe that's our boat. Well, we love our families and we should. But maybe they're our security net. Maybe we have rested our hope in that. We develop a strong bond in that relationship. And again, in our success and our jobs, maybe. There's a lot of things. Our own health. Some of us could be fitness, as we say, nuts. We may be striving to strengthen this body. They were constantly involved with its welfare. Certainly, we don't need to be sloven. We don't need to destroy this body. But by the same token, just as we need a job, we don't need it to be our all, do we? Again, we are in a boat of security. You see how easy it is? How easy it is to make that decision that we're not going to step outside the boat, that anything cannot get in that way. See, that's our problem. We're not going to step out of the boat. Because we might, if we do that, we'll lose the relationship. And if we do that, we may lose that successful job that we have been striving for. If we do that, we may lose that promotion. If we do that, we may lose the money and security that we love so well. See, what we're tempted to trust in is our very well-being here. But we should be trusting in the Lord with all our heart. You see, dear friends, each of us have a boat. You see how complicated it becomes? Somebody said, well, we walk by faith. But then we start listing the things that we prioritize in our lives. Or maybe someone else observes that because we're not willing to be honest. And we discover where our faith really lies, or our trust lies. And it's not in God. And it's not in His people. And it's not in the things of God. Not the things that will be secure forevermore, as Jesus points to us in Matthew chapter 6. You see, we each have a boat. And we each have a boat in which we're willing to stay in. And we're willing to do that all the while proclaiming that we have faith. Why does it surprise you that you don't succeed so well in your spiritual walk? Occasionally I'll have had studies with folks, and then we lose touch with those. They come back around. I've known Christians throughout my life. I've even been a part of that number at one time, and which it just seemed to keep struggling and striving and never really getting anywhere. I'm like the hamster on that wheel, and I'm going around and around, and I pause at times, I know that, and I come back, and I never seem to connect. Why is it so? Because I get back in the boat, if I got out at all. Or I'm standing on the edge of the boat, peering out, and grabbing for things that I think will secure me, and maybe things that I need, but I am, again, not committed. I'm not devoted. I'm casual about it. I'm not willing to get out of the boat for fear. Fear of what? Fear of losing what security I have, whatever that may be. Whatever those things that you feel very safe and secure about. Are you willing to get out of the boat? I would submit to you, 2 Corinthians 5 says, if we are to walk by faith and not by sight, we must. As Jesus makes it clear, we have treasure. Now the question will be, where will we place that treasure? Where will it be stored away? Will it be stored away in a moth-infested, rust, and a corroding environment? Or will it be in one that's eternal, where nothing can touch it? No destruction can happen at all. Each of us have a boat in which we're in. We each of us have a security that we are enjoying. Will we take the chance? Will we step outside that boat to exercise our faith? What's preventing you from being the best Christian that you can be? You know, when we get to our study in Acts, we need to realize that in Acts chapter 8 and verse 4, there's no logical, temporal reason for those Christians to go about everywhere preaching the gospel. Not after what was happening. That would have been the time we would have said, let's lay low. Let's wait until things calm down. We're not going to give up on our faith. See what we would reason? We're going to stay in our boat of safety and security. We're just going to go underground now. And we might even leave the city of Jerusalem because it's kind of hot right now. And we may venture. Oh, and by the way, we just might travel on home. But let's go in peace and quiet. We get far enough away from Jerusalem, they're not going to be chasing us that hard. They're going to be hard enough on our tails for us to lose out there. So we keep ourselves quiet. We stay in our little tight conclave. We worship God according to His prescribed way in a very quiet and private way. I'm not arguing against private worship. And I'm not even arguing against a quietness. But I'm just saying we might get to that point where let's just not speak about this matter. Let's not talk about our faith. Let's not even discuss it. Let's not even seem to be religious in this way openly. No public prayers, you see, and no songs or hymns of praise. No religious talk at all. See how simple this would be? Stay in the boat. They were getting out of the boat at the beginning in the church, and all of a sudden as they get out, things start heating up very quickly, all the way point until Stephen is killed. Now they're emboldened. That is, the real religious leaders against them. Now what do? Get back in the boat. So the next text could say, and they left Jerusalem and went back home. But will we have the rest of the story? They recognized their safety and security was not founded in those things. And maybe they learned that, not only through Christianity, but within the fellowship of the saints, because many of those that were there did not have their own security net anyway. They had to rely on others. Remember, they were selling their goods in Acts chapter 4 and verse 32. They had all things in common. They shared with one another. And we find that, of course, men and women were selling homes and properties and houses and giving up their security themselves, maybe even retirements that they would have, in order to aid their fellow saints. So they had already learned, hadn't they? We would argue they had already come out of their boat. So we can find out churches have boats too, don't they? Well, just as the individual will, so will the church. So as the individual growth, whether it be you or I, as we measure our lives before Christ, as we talk about faith, let's not talk about it in an abstract way. Let's not be generic about it. Let's be very specific about what faith means. When it says walk by faith and not by sight, he's not just talking about some ambiguous ideal that each of us may be able to put our stamp of approval on this, that, or the other in our lives. He's saying things that are very concrete, and we've already described in part this morning that our job as Christians is to examine what we are trusting in. And if it is not in the things of God, then we have misplaced trust. And we have, in effect, stayed in the boat. You know, when I think about this issue with the churches, again, this thing will segue into whole churches. Wonder why churches come and that they go? Why are the churches throughout history no longer here? Why is it that it's very possible that the very stamp of the church in this place or any other place will be gone within 100 years or less? Even in my lifetime, churches that rose up in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, maybe even 60s, some of them are gone. Why? I'll tell you, the very principled argument is the faith, the lack of faith. There's a lot of elements that are contained within that context, as I pointed out. But they lost sight. They had security. They remained in their boat. Notice in Revelation chapter 3, you see the church of Laodicea. And as he describes for us, this is a church that was neither cold nor hot in verse 15. He says, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing, and you do not know that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. It's a self-satisfied church, isn't it? He doesn't record any particular sin that they have. He doesn't talk about morality as being a concern here. He does that in some of the others. Remember, Jezebel would come in. He doesn't even talk about false teachers among this church. He doesn't talk about persecution as he will in regard to others. This church simply is self-satisfied. They have all the ordinances that God has given them in worship, no doubt. He doesn't talk about them perverting or corrupting those. He doesn't talk about what they don't do on the Lord's day. He doesn't even mention the fact that they're teaching a wrong salvation as he does to the churches of Galatia. Apparently all of that as well. Doesn't say anything specifically except they're neither cold nor hot. What does that tell you? They have no fire in their belly. They have no passion about anything. He says they're not even passionate about wrong things. You know, at least you can argue for a false teacher, there may be passion. Though it needs to be dealt with, it is still passion nonetheless. This is a church, again, that is staying in the boat. You don't rock it. You don't shake that boat up. It represents safety and security for them. It can be in the very comfort of the building that they have, in the neighborhood, the community. How often? And let me tell you that I believe that this is probably a primary concern, even if we don't believe it, because I can tell you many times that in conversations about church growth or our church here, or as I moved about and began to work with other places, some of the conversations about the church here and the dynamic and what we are and what we're not, one of the primary discussions oftentimes is our location. We're in the right place or we're in the wrong place. You know, years ago, this is the good place to be. And now it's not anymore. Right? Location, location. Sometimes it was about, again, well, all the young folks moved off and the jobs aren't here. Right? What are we talking about? We're talking about temporal matters. We're talking about physical things. We're not talking about spiritual things at this point. I'm not saying that none of those things, at least as far as numbers are concerned, cannot be reflective of spiritualness. But the church was never here to make sure that it was established around the economic welfare of a place. I go to India, and they're far poorer than we are, And there are churches in a lot of places that I go. Now, that doesn't mean they're everywhere. There's plenty of paganism in that society. And yes, there's a drought in many places. But as far as a pagan society goes, I can find churches. And I find them here and I find them there. And overall, the communities and the experiences are much worse than ours. Much poorer conditions. I've been in church buildings that simply were not church buildings at all. They were a concrete foundation with a tent over them. Fine with me. It works. It works for them, doesn't it? I've worshipped and I've studied. I've spent time in those environments. I've been on rooftops because that was where the church can meet. That was the most open area that they could, that was private, that they could meet in. I've seen churches because there wasn't any of that accommodation. In the village that they lived in, they would meet out in what we'd call the street, an area that wasn't much wider than this aisle right here, laid out with plastic chairs, set up with a table at the end, and they would worship out there on the Lord's Day in the open air and at other occasions. And they would pick all of their belongings up, including the chairs and everything, and take them back to their home or wherever. And that's how the church worshiped. You see the point I'm making? They didn't have a boat of security that we have. And so we can talk all we want. Well, we need to be thankful. And yes, we should. And we should be happy that we have these accommodations and comfort on a cold day like today. We're thankful we have heat, right? We're thankful on the hot days that we have air conditioning. But some of you lived in Florida long enough to probably worship in the day without air conditioning. And I've lived in places that were very warm. And as young as I have worshiped in buildings that had no air or even no fan at all. But never in Florida. Maybe it would be much harder, hotter than, but I've had some hot days. Again, boats of security. Maybe we're tempted to think along lines. How many people we have with good jobs and the monies that they have. The traditions that we set in place. You know, we do have traditions. And by the way, Lord willing, in a series of articles, I'm going to talk about our application of what we should do. How we determine that by our commands, by those things that are divinely prescribed for us, by example, and those things that we see by illustrations as well, and necessary inference. But you see, dear friends, there are many things that we do from tradition's sake, right? There are things that we do because they've been given to us by tradition. And that's all right. But are we being secured, safe, and tucked in by that? Change anything about those traditions, whether it be in the things that we do in assembly or the things that we do as a connection for this church's work? And you'll upset some people, right? You'll ruffle feathers. I've seen that in my life as well. You see, it's the boat that we have a problem with. This church here had a boat problem. They stayed in it. No doubt they probably saw the persecution all over the place, nearby in their neighboring communities. We don't want any of that. Let's see what we can do to keep things calm. No doubt they kept the Jewish contingency all right or happy, or they were very quieted about their work, their worship, whatever work they had. And therefore, they didn't cause anybody to be concerned about them. They didn't ruffle any feathers, and therefore, guess what? They stayed in their boat of security. Could you argue that this church at Laodicea had faith? There's no way. Not if what I understand about cold and hot is so. There's no way. On the other hand, some of their counterparts in the churches of Asia had a lot of persecution. Notice just in the church of Smyrna, he says, "And the angel of the church of Smyrna write," verse 8 of chapter 2, "the first and the last who was dead and has come to life says this, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich, and the blasphemy by those who say they are Jews and are not, and but are synagogue of Satan. Do not fear," he says, verse 10, "what you're about to suffer." He's telling them, you've got some suffering, and I know your faith, and I know the persecution is the element. You see that? They've been persecuted. They have to endure. Notice the church at Pergamum. Verse 13, "I know where you dwell, where Satan's throne is, and you hold fast my name and did not deny my faith even in the days of Antipas, my witness, my faithful one, who was killed among you where Satan dwells." Where were they? Were they in the boat? not in the community they lived in. He says, I know where you're at, and where you live is where Satan dwells, and I thank you for your service, your faith. I commend you for that. You see that? How about this church at Thyatira? I know your deeds, verse 19, and your love and faith and service and perseverance, and that your deeds and all and that your deeds of late are greater than at the first. But then, of course, we know that there's a woman there that's going to cause problems for them. I know your deeds. I know your faith. You notice we haven't had one word of that in the church of Laodicea. Go back to chapter 2 and verse 2. Of Ephesus, I know your deeds and your toil and your perseverance, and that you cannot tolerate evil men, and you put to test those who call themselves apostles, and they are not, and you found them to be false. And you have perseverance and endured for my name's sake and have not grown weary. Laodicea didn't even get tired. They didn't start working, so they didn't need to grow weary, did they? No perseverance discussion there either, right? Let's be careful about what we may think is persevering or challenging or enduring. Let's be careful about what we examine in respect to our faith. Let's be careful about what we identify as faith in us. Again, we better be ready. We better be ready to get out of the boat as a church, if indeed we are walking by faith and not by sight. Walking by faith and not by sight. A little rocking of the boat needs to occur, doesn't it? We need to realize we can get out of that boat. And even when that boat is moving about, let's not be afraid to step out. Let's take the challenge. Let's hear Jesus call, come, and let's go out. Let's do what Peter did and get out of the boat as an individual and as the church. Let us understand that we have been called to walk by faith. And another thing that we need to understand, and sometimes preachers have abused this, and I know throughout the denominational world they have, if it's part of the health and wealth ideal. If you serve God, He will take care of all your needs and you'll have everything that you want. We'll talk about safety. We'll talk about safety even in regards to your salvation. I'm usually careful to let you know there's challenges. If I'm working with you and studying with you perfectly, while the best solution for you is to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, I want you to know it's going to be presented with challenges. You've got to stay out of the boat, you see. It's not going to be always easy, that there'll be rocking out there. And so contrary to popular preaching, the troubles and trials and tribulations will not disappear. The question will be, how will we face them? Will we face them by faith? Or will we do as the Laodiceans? And we sheepishly back away, looking for every safety net and security that we can find. Let's be careful to do the latter. I do the first, and that is step out of the boat. Disregarding our perfect security in anything temporal, and realize what faith can produce in us and for us. So we know the question of this, right? Should we remain in the boat? Is there ever a time or an occasion where staying in the boat is the best of solutions? Is ideal? Not from what I see. Because here's what we would argue from the text. Not only was it Peter's obligation to come outside that boat, I would argue the rest of them should have been encouraged to do the same thing. I would imagine they might have been thinking, like we just said earlier, well, let's wait and let Jesus come here in the boat. I would argue the 11 should have got out with Peter. And by the way, Peter gets outside the boat, and we know that he was shaken in his faith at a moment, so that therefore he was not able to complete his task, and Jesus had to lift him up. But you know what? That may be with us. We may be scared and frightful, and so we're not everything we should be. We are much weaker. That should not cause us to get out of the boat. That should never be the reason. Knowing that we might fail. Especially, as I've argued, if all of them would have got out, what if that would have been enough for everyone to walk to Jesus? What if that would have been enough for every one of them to get there? Right? Don't we do better together than alone? Isn't there great opportunity seen in that kind of walking? The true walking by faith? We can't construct our own security network and blankets. It's not going to work. Nothing's going to save us from the wrath of God except for walking by faith. Walking by faith is the only solution. There will be no security. So we're going to have to stand against the trials and tribulations. And James says we're going to face them if we're honestly faithful. Count it as a joy to fall into various trials and tribulations, he says. Paul would say that we're going to suffer persecution if we live godly. So there is no way of escaping it. We got to get out of the boat. Yes, Peter's faith wavered. Yes, he took his eyes off the Lord. And yes, he even started sinking. And yes, he would cry out to the Lord. But isn't that the point? He would cry out to the Lord to save him. He didn't call back to his fellows, throw me a lifeline, did he? You notice that? He didn't holler back and say, hey men, hey brethren, throw me a lifeline so you can drag me back to the boat. He cries out to Jesus. So does it sound like a man that's faithless? It sounds like a man who has been, yes, challenged in his faith, faltering, but knew exactly who to turn back to. And he did just that, and Jesus lifted him up. So I stress again, will we get out of the boat? Individually, will we get out of the boat? That's going to be part of our challenge in the study of Acts. And furthermore, as a church, are we going to get out of the boat? Because if we do it together, I promise you, it will go well. Why? Because God says it will. Will there be trouble? Yes. Will there be challenges? Yes. Will there be temporal, at least seemingly, setbacks? Most certainly. Will there be times when we will be wanting to get back in that boat? Maybe even a time in which we will climb back in the boat. It's very possible. But it's still manageable because if we do it by faith and we help one another to stay out there on that rocky or that terrible water, that water that is moving against us, not for us, wanting to splash against us and drag us under and drown us. But we won't let it happen, will we? Why? Because Jesus won't let it happen. Jesus won't let it happen, and we can do that together. We can't allow Satan to sift us as wheat. In Luke 22 and verse 31, that's exactly what Jesus said that would happen to Peter. Now, if he does, we need to arise from that with strength. He promises never to leave us nor desert us. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. He promises he'll never forsake us. So we've got to walk by faith. But to walk by faith, you can't do it in the boat. You got to get out of the boat. There is no sure ground. There is no perfect footing. There is simply troubled waters of which we will walk upon because it's not by sight. I don't need sight for a watery ground, do I? If it's water underneath my feet, I need Jesus, don't I? He couldn't look down. When he did, that's when he would fall. Peter understood that water couldn't save him. That water would destroy him. Only Jesus could. And so he knew he didn't need his sight. And by the way, it's a very dark night, isn't it? Stormy night. They couldn't exactly make Jesus out perfectly. So there was nothing about his sight was going to help him. But walking by faith would. And walking by faith did. Though again, he faltered. He maintained a faith that was acceptable. A faith that God would help strengthen. A faith that he could grow upon. And he did. As we end with John chapter 20, we know that Jesus says, will you feed my sheep? Will you tend it? And he would. And he did. Aren't we happy? Aren't we glad that he did? Because we have this to be thankful for. We have the experience of Jesus. We have the experience of Peter before Jesus. We have Peter's walking by faith. There will be times when we will be challenged, but we'll have to walk by faith. Are we given excuses rather than walking by faith when it comes to inviting others to study with us or even to worship? To asking somebody, can I talk about Jesus and his salvation to you? Will you allow for that? Are we calling, afraid of being insecure? Are we afraid of our responses, the responses we receive? We're not going to walk by faith if that's the case. We're going to reject because we're afraid of their rejection. We're going to reject our faith because we don't want to get ridiculed, mocked. We don't want someone to think ill or different of us than otherwise. What about when it comes to hospitality and practicing it? Hospitality literally meaning those that are outside, helping others that have need. What about the taking care of the hospitality between one another, opening our homes? Oh, I can't do that. My home's not large enough. I don't have enough room. I got a little bitty place. I got too many kids. I've got little kids. Again, we're worried about the wrong things, aren't we? God's not worried about the size of the house. He's not worried about those sorts of things. He's not worried about the number of kids. He's wanting to know, will we walk by faith and not by sight? Everything cannot be secure. And everything does not have to be so secure temporally in order for us to solve this problem. In fact, what we discover is in order to walk by faith, we're not going to have any perfect security. In fact, I think that's what Jesus wanted us to know. To stop trusting in what we have here in this life and start trusting in Him. So we do it in small ways if we're careful. We do it eventually in small ways, or we do it in small ways right now to eventually even do it in much larger and bigger ways. Sharing with others, making sure that we get out of the boat, taking care of the sick if necessary, teaching the Bible classes as opportunities may arise, looking forward to help and comfort those that are in hardship or in problems and difficulties. Again, get out of the boat. Anytime I look back at this story like this and I think about it in that context, I remember those that have gone before me, people that have helped me in my life, aided me, lifted me up in the worst of times. They got out of their boat. They got rid of their security nets in order to provide for me. Some of them even gone to the reward even now, and I still remember them. I cherish them. You see, the point is, we're never, ever going to be successful with our faith if we don't get out of our boats. If we don't get out of our boats and get into the security which God would provide, which is an eternal security. Will it mean that there will be insecurity as far as the temporal life is concerned? Sure, but I don't account for anything. It doesn't amount for anything. So what if I lose this? I don't gain that. I gain everything. I gain everything because my treasure is laid up in heaven. So the question, I think, is not should we remain in the boat, but why aren't we getting out of the boat? Let us exercise our faith. This is just one component part. And this year, we're going to have some lessons in regards to walking by faith. And we're going to take illustrations like this from time to time. And Lord willing, we will develop a better appreciation of what it means to walk by faith. May I encourage you to think about these things. And if you're here this morning and you haven't even begun that journey of faith, you haven't begun the journey of faith because of various reasons. Maybe you feel secure right now and you're afraid of what you will lose temporally because you have obeyed. We've talked about this before, what great faith it must have taken for the priest in Acts chapter 6 and verse 7 to get out of their boats. They surely did, just to obey the gospel. They gave up their jobs, they gave up everything, their social, and besides which, they would also be the first targets of anybody. But they got out of their boats, didn't they? And we see this time and again as we read the New Testament, and as we will study in the book of Acts. Will you get out of your boat this morning, and will you obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, knowing though it will be challenging and difficult, that it will be rewarding? And as we've already stated earlier, that each of us have one another to aid, to strengthen, to bolster the resolve to do that. Will you do that? Will you obey the gospel this morning? Coming, repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus as the Lord, and being immersed in water for the remission of your sins. And having done that, live faithfully before God. Though you walk an insecure life, as it were, as far as the temporal affairs, you walk a very secured life in Jesus. Have you gotten out of your boat and then climbed back in? Have you been in that boat for some time? I don't care what it is. Because you're feeling insecure, you're afraid, maybe you don't feel like anybody's there for you. I'm assuring you that I will be if you want, if you're allowing it. That's why we're called to repent, pray for one another when we have sinned against God. Because the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Is it something we need to do for you? Maybe you need to bring your petition and your concerns and your sin before this congregation and before God. We'll help you with that. I assure you, we will work with you. We'll help you to get back out on that choppy water, that choppy sea, ready to walk again by faith. But you can't, you won't do it until you make that first step and get out of that boat. Will you do that as we've come, as we sing, as we stand and sing the invitation song?